Thank you everyone for coming. And let's start. First off, some introduction. You know my name. I'm a bit of a nomad. And what you see in the bottom is gibberish. If you don't understand it, it's fine because you don't know Finnish then. But that's my song, which means it says it's not my home, which is a good song for a nomad like me. I work for Red Hat. Work on FOSS. I've been working on free software and open source for a long time now. And I've been to flying, and I love cats. I had a similar talk at RustFest, so if some of you were there, then it's a recap. Otherwise, it's a background story, real quick. The whole thing started with this project called GeoClue. It's a daemon. It's a service on your Linux laptops, which finds where you are through different sources and stuff. It's a geolocation service. It's, as I said, it finds you where you are, and it's written in C currently. I've been a maintainer since the rewrite. It was in 2013, I think, I thought, like, let's oxidize it, but you'll ask why. I have reasons. And it's called crash reports. I got a lot of crash reports, and Will was telling me that on their end, in Endless, they saw a huge amount of crashes in GeoClue. So I was like, yeah, I'm working on that. So permanently. And it's my spare time thing, so I don't want to, you know, chase after crash reports and C code. So location is the most sensitive data that is about you. So you don't want to be trusted by everyone and anything. And especially if it's written in a unsecure, very, very unsecure language, it's not a good idea. I just love Rust for various reasons. I have a blog post about it if you want to read. I thought, like, let's do it, let's oxidize it. But what were the challenges that I was looking forward to? First one was Mason. It's a build system that is being used by a lot of projects out there now. I thought, because Mason doesn't have like built-in support for cargo, so I thought like it will be a bit of a challenge. The other thing was Dbus. Like as I said, it's a service on your laptop, so it's a Dbus service. Talk about Dbus a bit. If you're not familiar with it, it's a very efficient binary inter-process communication protocol. It's used in desktop and embedded systems quite a lot. There is one crate already existing. It's called Dbus RS. I wasn't very happy with the API and stuff, but I wanted to use it, even though it depends on a C library called libdbus. That library is not very famous for its interfaces and stuff. I think there's some bunch of other problems with it. I don't think not many people use it anymore, even. We had this many, many issues, but I still decided to use this crate because that was the only one, and I didn't have a lot of time. It's all my spare time stuff. I even contributed to it in the beginning, have a few patches there and stuff. We had a Hackfest. We do this Rust GNOME Hackfest, which is about GNOME and Rust, and every 6 months, twice a year. One of them was in May in Berlin, and I started working on this to oxidize GeoClue. Turns out to be very much easier to work around. Like the workaround was pretty simple, and it was not a big issue. I could call from Mason. I could call Cargo, and Cargo does its own thing, and that's it. I didn't need something back from the results of Cargo into Mason. So it simplified a lot of things. The Dbus RS API turned out to be quite overcomplicated, and I couldn't figure it out. I asked others around, and they couldn't figure it out either. So I was like, how about I write first Dbus from scratch? And yeah, I thought, how hard can it be, right? Let's check it out. Started looking into what's involved. And on a high level, it's you have objects, and each object has a path. It's called object path. And it's just a string that represents that object on the bus. In Dbus, you have buses. Like think of it as sockets, and they're talking to apps talking to each other on those sockets, and the services expose objects, and on those objects, you have certain interfaces. Each object can support multiple interfaces or one interface, but it has to support one at least. And those interfaces and then methods on them. So it's a bit dynamic. Like the reason it's like we have interfaces and not methods, an API directly on the object, is that it could be more dynamic, that you can on the fly change, like, okay, this object now supports this interface and not. So yeah, you have methods on them, simple input output parameters, and signal is just the same, it's just the other way around. So you have parameters from them, and you get signals called on you. Like as a client, you get signals and you send method calls. And also you have properties that represent different properties on your interfaces. But on the low level, it's just message passing on sockets, as I said. And there's a wire format for these, sort for interfacing with the Dbus. And it's also, you can call it gvariant, but not quite, because gvariant is a glib API to handle this wire format. But the people who were working on that, they made some changes. And the intention was to put those changes back into Dbus spec, so Dbus itself will change. But that didn't happen for some reason. I don't know why. So yeah, gvariant is slightly different than the wire format of Dbus, but it's based heavily on that, so there's a lot of similarity. So at least you can have the same API. So for example, glib has Dbus APIs, and they use gvariant. So you deal with gvariant, and they convert behind the scene. And this format, gvariant, is used standalone as well. Projects like OS3 and Flatpak and Dconf, they're using it. There are some examples, but I think there's a lot more out there. What is this wire format? It's just they defined a bunch of data types and their encodings. Since it's a binary format, there's the alignment consideration in the memory, but it follows natural alignment. So if you have unsigned integer of 4 bytes, so the alignment for that is 4 bytes. If it's 8 bytes, then it's 8 bytes and stuff like that. We'll see that later. And each data type has a signature. Signature is just a string that represents that type. So the basic types, have one character string, like for example, S for strings and stuff like that. But for complicated one, you have like longer signatures. But there's limited to 255 characters because we will see later why. And basic types are like mapping very nicely to the Rust basic types, so that's not hard. And containers kind of also, like, you have arrays, which is like vector or an array in Rust structure. And a dictionary is just like a hash map. And we have another type called variant, it looks very simple, but it makes things a bit hard. Because Dbus, the format, the wire format is not self-defined. So you have to have the signature. You need to know the signature or what data is in there, what kind of data to be able to decode it. So it's not self-describing. But this data, this type is, because for the signature for this type is dynamic. So you get it in the encoded data, what is actually in the variant. So you can put it any of those types that I mentioned in the variant, and you put a signature in before it, and you send it to the other side. So it's for dynamically typing things, used quite a lot, actually, on Divas. Example, so that you understand what the hell am I talking about. So let's say you have a string you want to transfer on in this format. So the format, like we will go from right to left. Oh, and in the bottom, you have the byte addresses in the message. I've highlighted the 4-byte boundary, so you can tell more easily what's what. It's supposed to be null terminated, and just before the string, you put the byte length. It's not the it's the length of the string, but without the null byte. I learned it the hard way. I forgot about that, and test cases weren't passing, and then I found out. You have the length, and then since the length is the fixed part of this string encoding, and that's 4 bytes, you have the alignment of 4 bytes. So that's why we needed two bytes before it, null bytes or padding, to align it on a 8-byte boundary, 4-byte boundary. And invariant, it's the same. There's a reason I'm giving you these details, you'll see later. When you put a string in a variant, it's the same if you look at from right to left. You have the null byte, you have the string, and you have the byte length of it. And again, you need to pad it. And since you are putting it in a variant, what you do is the first part is the signature of the data, because you only know at runtime, if you see decoded data, you only know at runtime what is encoded in the variant. So you need a signature first in it. And signature is encoded in the same way as a string. The only difference is that the length is 1 byte size. So that is a good thing, because then you don't need any alignment, because it's 1 byte. But you're limited to 255 characters of signature, but that's more than enough. You don't want a complex type so complex that it's more than 255 characters long. So that's how you encode a string in a variant. So I was like looking at that, I was like, that's not so hard, let's do it. I was working on in the Hackfest and after for 3 days, I was not distracted by this work thing, so it went very fast. And I managed to made some good progress in just a few days, like established a connection, called a method on the other side, and I was like, yeah, I can do it. Let's do it. Cool. I decided to create a new library called ZBus. And why name ZBus? Because it sounds really awesome, so I chose this name. I thought, like, let's start with the hard part, the lower level. So if I'm writing a ZBus library, I should write it completely in Rust, like from scratch. And I call that part Z-variant because it deals with the variants. It's called because G-variant and all, you know. So I had these goals in mind, like how I would do things, and I wanted it to be very efficient, if possible, even more efficient than the C implementation in glib, which I think I'll achieve if I haven't already. But the silly goal was I wanted to be efficient from day one, and I don't think that's a good idea. So if you ever start a project, don't do it this way. I came up with this first trait. I was like, yeah, this is the trait that will all the data type that can be encoded and decoded from this format, they will implement this interface. And as you can see, there's lifetimes in there, and that's because I wanted to be super efficient. So lots of issues, of course, in any project, if you start from scratch especially. Loads of fun with lifetimes. The variant representation proved to be a bit challenging. Like, the most natural I was thinking first was, like, I can have generic type on the variant value, like have a struct signature and then value, and that's it, and that would be generic. But then when you are decoding, you need to know, you know, how do you decode? Like, you need to know the type in advance, like the whole type. So it didn't exactly work. So I went with enums. It's much better, I think, with that way. But eventually I dealt with all these problems, and I had test cases for each data type I added support for, and it started to look really good. And I was like about to, you know, I said, let's just document it and just, you know, release the first version of zvariant. It would be cool. But I, as soon as I added test the support for hash maps, like the dictionary type, test cases are not passing. I thought it's a test case, but it wasn't. I'll give you a chance. If you can tell me what is wrong with this, this is where it goes wrong. Like when I added, like when I put it in a variant, the dictionary, so I hit a problem. So I was looking at this, and it looked right. This is just the same as we did a string in a variant. Now it's an array of 64-bit integer in an array in a variant. So how you do it is the same, very similar to the string. You have the array itself, and you have the elements, like the first element need to be at least padded. You have the length of the array in bytes. By the way, this is in bytes, not the number of elements in the array. And then the padding for the length itself, and then the signature, like we had with the string. But this time you have like A is for array and T is for the 64-bit integers. So you can tell what it is inside the variant. But there is one thing that's wrong in here. Can anyone tell me what is wrong here? Huh? No, no. What about alignment?
Like you're not calculating the alignment correctly for the variable size array?
No. Okay, I'll move forward. So I couldn't figure this out for many days, right? So, and I was like back to Dbus spec reading and staring and stuff and figuring out what the hell is going on. Till I realized that I think I'm wrong about the padding. As I said, like the variant does not require any padding itself because it starts with a signature and signature's length is 1 byte, so that doesn't require any padding. But the more I read the spec, I was getting more and more sure that the array itself or the anything in the variant itself, the value of the variant, does not require padding either. And that's what is wrong. So I was like, okay, how do I fix this? I was like, this needs a complete overhaul of the whole how the all the variant encoding and decoding is working. So, like, okay, whatever, I have to do this. But I first was like, okay, let's this lifetimes like each time I made any change, significant change in the whole thing, lifetime would come in the way. So I was like, this is not good, and that's why I shouldn't have started with super efficient implementation from day one. So I was like, let's kill all the lifetimes first. So the way I did it was I created this data type. I looked around first, like if there is exactly like something like this. There's cursor, but cursor is not exactly like this. So you, this allows you to create like a shared. You can have a slice of a data, and you can, you know, have as many slices as possible and pass it around the clones of that because it uses a RC, and it knows its position in the whole buffer because the alignment is based on your position in the entire buffer, the entire messages. If it's a Dbus message, then the entire Dbus message. So you need to know where you are at that point. And efficiency is not a religion, so we can do it later. It would be nice, of course, but. So after 2 months of this lifetime killing and creating this new interface and everything, I was done. And I was like, okay, let's see the test case. And I was sitting and I was about to hit enter after, you know, cargo test, and I was like, would it pass? Would it pass? No, it didn't pass. So I went back to more spec reading and byte staring. Turns out it wasn't the padding after all. You know, you do need to pad everything. It was the length. The length does not include the first element's padding. The specs wrote it very clearly. For some reason, I missed that. So that's the only small thing I had missed previously. And I did the whole changes and everything, and it was this trivial thing, and I fixed it soon. So it should be 16 because, yeah, yes, so there's 8 bytes and then 8 bytes, so that's 16. Yeah, trivial to fix. Well, Christmas holiday well spent. I published the variant. It's out there. You can find it. I've added docs too. you can use it in a very easy way. You can you have a string you want to encode. You tell it which format. Currently, we only do dbus format, so it doesn't matter. And then you can decode it back. Simple. A bit slightly more complicated, integer in a variant, for example. Same thing, but you convert it to a variant and then encode the variant itself and then back to variant. And then you can get the value from the variant. So don't use it yet, but because I do want efficiency. So I'm back into that, and I think I'll need API breakage for sure. Not just because of that, but also imagine what first issue anyone filed on this crate, support for Serde. Like, why don't you have Serde API? So I was looking into that, and I was like, yeah, it makes sense, and if I can make it work, and I'm working on that. I have an experimental branch for it. The main challenge with Serde is that it's way too generic. I'll show you. So I have a proof of concept serializer implementation already, and it works as far as I know. if you're familiar with Serde, usually you get like an API like this, where you say 2 bytes and or whatever, 2 to write or what, whatever is the output of the output type of the API. And but the only difference is that I'm requiring another trait from the type you want to encode or later decode as well. And the reason is that I need the signature at the moment, at least. So I'm trying my best to, I mean, because otherwise, what's the point of Serde? Because with Serde, you should be able, anything that implements the Serde serialize or deserialize, that type should be serializable by all the crates that implement Serde. And that's the whole point of it, is generic. So I don't see much point of providing Serde if I can't remove this limitation. So I'm working on it. Even if I provide a macro, right? Like Serde provides easy derived macros, so you can put it on your custom type and that has serialized and deserialized then. So you can add one more, but just for my crate, you would add that. That's weird. So, I'm really trying hard to avoid that. Yeah, drop it. And once I have that done, I'll look into deserializer. I looked a bit, but I haven't done any implementation. And I think the byte order should be configurable right now. I just assume native byte order. It works fine with dbus because, you know, it's on the same machine. And gvariant support shouldn't be that hard, but fingers crossed. And a few goodies like that, right, in jvariant, zvariant, I mean. And also large area handling. I've been told like a lot, some of the projects, at least OS3, for example, store